Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind. Warning. Pastor Scheidbach is not politically correct, and even more shocking, he is a Christian who uses the word God and prays in Jesus' name in public.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. Day without immigrants. Well, what a mistake that was. I guess now we all know what we already suspected. We really can't live without all the immigrants. Apparently, we survived. A tweet from my assistant pastor, Pastor Sanchez, by the way, sums it up nicely. Quote, power still on, water still runs, McDonald's still open, not as much traffic. Probably the best protest ever. Well, what was supposed to happen? I think the idea was we were supposed to find out just how much our lives depend on immigrant labor. There is this idea, it seems, out there floating around, that conservatives are against immigration or that they are against immigrants. I don't know where that comes from. I realize the demographic of my audience probably does not include a very significant number of the sorts of people who believe the MSM spin on the president's immigration policies, in which they suggest that it is somehow a statement against immigrants to enforce our nation's immigration laws. You know, it's a statement against drivers to enforce traffic laws, right? Liberals try and try hard to make it all about whites versus Mexicans or Hispanics. You know, with them, it's always whites versus blacks or whites versus Hispanics or whites versus Islam. But relatively speaking, very few Hispanics stayed home from work for a day without immigrants. And a great many of our black brothers and sisters don't run with BLM, Black Matters, Black Lives Matters crowd, you know? Nor do they stand in the streets calling for white genocide. And the point is, this country is not divided along racial lines as they expected it is, or they're trying to make it that way. But the fact is, that's not where we're divided. We are divided along ideological lines. What separates us are issues of morality and values. So Trump is criticized for not yet meeting with the Black Caucus. A headline from Washington Post. Quote, if Trump can't arrange his own meeting with the Congressional Black Caucus, how does he unite the country? End quote. I don't know if you catch this. Liberals tend to view the country as divided over issues of race and fix that, fix everything. The fact is, we are divided, but the division isn't racial. The division is ideological. We are divided between the dream of our founders and the dream of Obama's father. Which dream did Martin Luther have, by the way, if you've ever read him and then read Obama's book and so? Well, I'll tell you what, Martin Luther's dream was inspired by our founders. Well, here's an interesting headline, quote, reality will get its revenge on Donald Trump, end quote. And by the way, that's from Michael Gerson, former top speechwriter for GW and currently op-ed columnist for The Washington Post. Reality will get its revenge? Huh. You know, reality took revenge recently on the liberals in the last election. It does not seem to have impressed them. It seems instead to have driven them more deeply into their fanatical fantasies. But I like the idea. The revenge of reality. Sounds like a good book title. Trump's continued war with the media is amusing. Makes for good theater, but I also believe there is something important happening here. Journalism needs to balance their checkbook. They are so seriously overdrawn in their credibility account with the Americans. And everybody knows Trump is not the one responsible for your problems, MSM. The serious loss of confidence that you're experiencing from the American people has been something you've constructed with your own hands. You destroyed your own credibility by abusing the trust we put in you. It's time for America to demand the press pay their dues, do their due diligence, including making sure you're referring to a genuine tweet account, gathering and vetting the facts, and then letting the people decide what those facts mean to them. You know, instead of deciding what Americans are supposed to think about the facts and then filtering and twisting the news to fit your interpretation of it. What about the Flynn fiasco? Now we know he did not break any laws. In fact, the only laws that were broken by those who leaked the classified CIA information to the press that was used to implicate him unfairly and illegally, by the way. So why did Trump dump him? Trump is reputed to be fiercely protective of his people when he thinks they're right. So we'll take a look at that. But because I might not get to it, let me just say quickly that I think the fact that he lied to Pence, misrepresented himself to Pence, is the core of the problem here. That's just not acceptable, apparently, in Trump's team. That's good. Is there a shadow government embedded throughout the bureaucracy tasked with undermining the current president and subverting our constitutional form of government? You know, Obama told us he was not going anywhere. He told us he was going to stick around and protect his legacy. Well, now we know he worked hard to plant operatives in high levels of the bureaucracy, creating an army of activists that do his bidding. You know, those concerned about Trump's victory were told, quote, now is the time for organizing, so don't mope, end quote. What was Obama say? What was the message he was sending out there? Obama established, you know, in his first campaign, a network called Organizing for Action, and continued to maintain relationship and connection to that organization and develop it and let it grow. And I'm told that group exceeds 30,000 militant activists answering to his direction. So now, rather than leave Washington as every other president has graciously done after leaving the White House, Obama has decided to stick around. He's moved into a mansion some 2 miles from the White House, set up a command center there from which he runs his operations of opposition against Trump. He is attempting, apparently, to continue controlling the government from outside the White House through a shadow government. Operatives appointed by him in high levels of government bureaucracy that answer to him and not the president. I mean, it's like waking up from a conspiracy theorist's worst nightmare, rubbing your eyes, and then dismayed to discover you weren't dreaming after all. Russia and Syria. Wow. Russia deployed a ground-based new capable cruise missile inside Russia in direct contradiction to a decades-old arms treaty with us, plants an intelligence-gathering ship near one of our sub-bases, sends two Russian Su-24 fighter jets to buzz one of our guided missile destroyers, the USS Porter. And all of this while negotiating with our president about a joint effort to clear ISIS out of Syria. What will Mad Dog Mattis say about this? Well, so far, he says Russia is going to have to prove themselves before they can expect any joint operation with us in Syria. So, we'll see. And then there is this video that my dear son brought to my attention this morning. It's gone viral. Over 5 million have viewed it on YouTube. It's called Why America is Not the Greatest Country in the World Anymore. It is excerpted from an episode of a TV show called Newsroom. And I recognize the actors here, most of them. Certainly the main spokesman for the bit. He plays a news anchor named Will McAvoy. But I can't remember his name. Let me see. Here it is. Jeff Daniels is the actor that plays that character. And here, his speech is in response to the question, what makes America the greatest nation on earth or in the world or something like that? And his response is resonating very powerfully with millions of Americans. And at the same time, it's interesting to me how both liberals and conservatives alike are reacting to this on something of a visceral level. Viscera refers to our internal organs in the main cavities of the body, particularly the intestines, something the Bible refers to as our bowels. And it's a word used in the Bible to refer to the deepest emotive response center of our being, where our soul's responses to what concerns us intersects with our physical body, where we feel our thoughts in our gut, you know what I mean? But often our thoughts get fuzzy and blurry at the gut response level, so it's important to step out of your belly and engage critically and analytically the thoughts that are moving your bowels. And folks, it's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Liberals, progressive community organizers, Saul Alinskyites, his disciples et al., they just keep on trying to divide the nation along racial lines. And they have succeeded in some measure, but they can't quite get it to gel into the revolution they're conspiring to spark. Some recent runs at getting it going have basically fizzled. You know, much like the day without immigrants. Folks, fireworks sparkle and dazzle, but don't actually produce anything beyond spectacle. And that's about all they've been able to stir up so far. I don't mean to belittle the property damage and the more radical efforts resulting in the loss of the lives of some of America's finest. And I'm speaking of the police officers who've been shot by these crazy people. And nor do I mean to dismiss as irrelevant the shocking displays of irreverence and vulgarity we were exposed to at the Women's March and all that. I only mean to say that at the end of the day, I don't believe the organizers behind these things got what they were going for. And the reason is actually both simple and profound. The fact is, at the grassroots level, where most Americans live, we live together in harmony. We don't measure people by the color of their skin. We take them as we find them in our day-to-day life. The fact is, most black people don't identify with Black Lives Matters, and most Hispanics don't identify with RASA. And I don't identify with, well, for example, KKK or any of the white supremacist group. I don't know any whites that do. There is a minority of idiots in every demographic. Okay. I mean, there are maroons of every color, as Bugs Bunny might say. Red and yellow, black, brown, and white. Truly, are we not all various shades of brown? And do we not all bleed red? And have we not all one common ancestor in Adam? And are we not all varieties of one kind, created in the image and likeness of God, equally endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights? Are we not, after all, fellow space travelers on this ship called Earth? Do we not all proceed from birth to the grave? And will we not all face our judge, where we will be held accountable for our own and not another's deeds? Folks, most whites don't judge people by the color of their skin. Most blacks don't either. Most Hispanics don't. Most Chinese don't. Most Japanese don't, and so on. At least not in America. That certainly has not been my experience. The reason they can't get a revolution going over race is that, at the end of the day, race is not that big a deal to us. We're concerned about other things. Justice is of great concern to all of us. But their efforts to make racial issues into issues of justice fail because, frankly, too many blacks and Hispanics and whites find that the issues we face in common. That injustice is a problem for all of us, not only some of us. I mean, look, too many blacks know too many whites to believe that all whites are bad. Too many whites know too many blacks to believe all blacks are bad. Too many Hispanics know too many whites to be made to believe. Get my point. This country is not going to be united by a president who plays into the hands of those community agitators who are trying to divide us by race and define us by race. To say Trump can't possibly expect to unite the country if he doesn't meet with black racial activists, you know, community agitators, that's absurd. What they don't seem to get is this. Trump has succeeded at connecting with the people where they are living. And in that place, the divisions are not racial. The divisions, frankly, are ideological. And there are people of all races who align themselves around some ideological idea that would be peculiar to them and their personal beliefs. That's what's polarizing the nation, ideas. But interestingly, it's not even a polarization over socialism versus capitalism. You see, not only are we not divided by race, we're really not divided in that way either. Now, it's going to surprise you, I know. So let me say right away that I'm not blind to the very serious debate ongoing in this country and one in which we all should enter over whether we need more government involvement in our lives or less. That's a real issue, a real problem, and a real concern. The war on profit, yes, it continues, and it is an ideological war. Is profit evil? Of course not. Interestingly, every actor you see who plays these roles that attempt to propagate that idea made a pretty significant profit at it, let me tell you. God says there is profit in all labor, and that the treasures of wickedness profit nothing, that riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. Profit is mentioned more than 40 times in the Bible. Only a very few maroons actually buy into the idea that profit is evil. Most of us know the difference between entertaining drivel that we hear from these actors and actresses and actual life. Socialism has failed or is failing everywhere it has been tried. Capitalism works because it affirms property ownership and the right of property, which everybody is interested in. And it encourages investment that creates the jobs that allows everyone to share in the profits that are generated by the enterprise. Don't you understand? That's why it works. Let me tell you, however, at what level this country is truly divided. We are divided at the level of morality. We are at odds regarding what was at one time a shared set of moral maxims. I mean, even truth is no longer valued as it was, or at least it is not understood in the same way that it used to be. We are no longer united in our moral values. I mean, we all value our families. We all value freedom. Our liberties are important to all of us, both sides of the so-called aisle. We all share a common concern for right and wrong, for justice and injustice. However, We don't agree on a fundamental level about what is right and what is wrong. Each side is passionate about what they believe is righteous, but one side increasingly calls evil what we, in America, have traditionally called good, and they are calling that good that we once called evil. And God told us in the Bible this would happen. And this, by the way, transcends both color and economics. This transcends political party as well. The fundamental dissonance that's agitating discontent is at the level of our values, the morality level, the spiritual level. And as this disparity continues to grow, here is what will finally become apparent. The polarization is between two spirits. The spirit of Antichrist operating in the children of disobedience. We might call them the Luciferians. You know, Alinsky's hero. And most people involved in this are unaware of it. But that crowd is in a rage of hatred and defiance aimed at those who are motivated by another spirit, the spirit of Jesus Christ. It's already apparent if you're paying attention, but I've got to go to a break right now. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back. Please plan to come be with us this Sunday. We have Patch the Pirate. That's Mark Hamilton. He's written many wonderful gospel songs. He's an outstanding gospel singer. He'll be there with some of his crew, and we're looking forward to spending the day with Mark Hamilton, Patch the Pirate, beginning at 9:30 a.m., continuing then at 10:45 a.m. for the second service, and then he'll be with us again at 6 p.m., and each service is unique. God bless you. God bless America, and I'll see you in church.
If you want to help us expand the reach of this broadcast, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and click on the donate button or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Want to help us slay the dragons of deceit with the sword of the Spirit? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
Please plan to come be with us this Sunday. We have Patch the Pirate. That's Mark Hamilton. He's written many wonderful gospel songs. He's an outstanding gospel singer. He'll be there with some of his crew, and we're looking forward to spending the day with Mark Hamilton, Patch the Pirate, beginning at 9:30 a.m., continuing then at 10:45 a.m. for the second service, and then he'll be with us again at 6 p.m., and each service is unique. God bless you. God bless America, and I'll see you in church.
Devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on the air.
Stand by.
The Brainless Mission is about to blow your mind.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheibach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. I mentioned that clip from a TV show called Newsroom that has gone viral on YouTube and how it intrigued me. Jeff Daniels plays a character named Will McAvoy, who is a fictional news anchor through whom the creator of the show, Aaron Sorkin, I understand, offers his commentary on American culture and politics. In a clip of one episode, I think it was the first, maybe the second, a young college student asks a panel consisting of one flaming liberal, one flaming conservative, and then McAvoy, ostensibly the intelligent one in the room, this question. In one sentence or less, you know what I mean? Let's make the person asking the question something of an airhead, because after all, it is an airheaded question, right? Quote, what makes America the greatest nation in the world, end quote. After some dramatic development, a table setting with McAvoy attempting to dodge the question, he's finally coaxed into giving an answer. And I'm intrigued by the number of conservatives who seem to be buying into McAvoy's answer and the number of liberals who are uncomfortable with his evident love for America and belief in her essential goodness. Even though he clearly believes America is no longer the greatest nation in the world, he avows that it was once upon a time. I won't take the time needed to explain that. In fact, I do understand, why so many conservatives warm to this character's passionate plea for America as she once was, or how I do understand what bothers liberals about this very liberal-friendly monologue on bygone America. What I want to do is get right to my critique, and even that will necessarily be abbreviated for our time constraints. Now, McAvoy's first attempt to give what he hoped would be taken as an acceptable and serious answer to the question goes something like this. The Constitution is a masterpiece, he said. James Madison was a genius, and the Declaration of Independence is, in my view, the greatest piece of American writing. He looks at the moderator of the panel discussion, and he says, you don't appear to be satisfied. And the moderator quips, one is a set of laws and the other is a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. Now, the McAvoy character is clearly being cheeky in his response, referring to these magnificent documents as being the reason he thinks America is the greatest nation on the earth, and the moderator is being at least mildly snarky in his response, dismissing these monumental documents as merely a set of laws and a declaration of war. And that was the first clear evidence that this was going to be an attack on the foundational distinctiveness of America. You know, it's like the scriptwriter felt a need to dismiss these, to get these, like, out of the way, and address the commonly held view that America's greatness is, in one way or the other, attached to her founding, and particularly these founding documents. To speak of the Constitution dismissively as a set of laws betrays a wanton lack of understanding of both that document, the historic context in which it was birthed, and the profound significance of the genius of that set of laws. Not to mention, if we include it with the Bill of Rights, and we certainly should, we're talking about a document that literally rocked the world and has brought tyrants to their knees in scores of nations, and has lighted a hope for freedom and liberty in the hearts of millions. It is utter nonsense to dismiss the Constitution from a discussion of what makes America great and unique, and even more ridiculous to dismiss the Declaration as a mere declaration of war. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, that document is not a declaration of war. There's not one word in that document that declares war on anyone. It's a declaration of independence that was taken by King George as a declaration of war. The sublime notion that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights is the very foundation upon which this government was constructed. I mean, it is the only sure ground upon which we may stand for our rights then, or now, or ever after. You know, once the scriptwriters then conveniently dismissed any notion that America's uniqueness and exclusiveness is attached in some way to its founding documents, well, finally, the McAvoy character breaks out in frustration and launches his monologue, tirade, really, explaining why he believes America is in fact not the greatest nation in the world. Let's analyze his argument. And here's where many conservatives might be heard cheering or weeping, depending on their point of view. He begins by looking at the token liberal on the panel and says the NEA is a loser. Cleverly, the progressive scriptwriters seed into the mind of the viewer the idea that it's virtually meaningless in terms of costs to the taxpayer, that is the NEA, and I'm assuming we're talking about the National Education Association, costing them only a few pennies of every paycheck, something the conservative on the panel, according to McAvoy, can hit you with when the real cost of the NEA is in votes, in airtime, in column inches, that kind of thing. And I won't try to get into that, although it's pretty weak stuff. Here's what I want to get to. He next says to that lady, "You know why people don't like liberals?" I might have said that, "You know why they hate liberals?" I can't remember. "It's because they lose." I thought that was interesting. And then he gets emotional and speaks the way people seem to talk today, using that very increasingly popular farming term from France in its vulgar sense, and of course using God's name in vain as a curse. That's always a good thing to do, right? You know, vulgarize sex and blaspheme God. There you go. Anyway, he says, quote, "If liberals are so expletive smart, how come they lose so expletive always?" End quote. Anyway, this section is clearly a play off of Trump, both in the way McAvoy is given to phrase his point and in the context of reducing the expectations of Americans to this simple formula that Americans are like people who like winners and hate losers. That's it. You know, like we're a bunch of idiots who don't have a thought in our head except, well, we like winners and we despise losers. In the next segment, McAvoy mocks the idea that what makes America exceptional is freedom. In angry, mocking tones, he lists several countries that also have freedom. He names Britain, he names France, he names Belgium, and a host of others, and really bears down on that withering conservative with disdain for the hubris that he would think what makes America exceptional is freedom, since out of the 270 nations on the earth, 180 have freedom. Now, many of you know me fairly well. I mean, we've been carrying on this conversation for about a decade. So you know I was about to leap through the screen and front off that character with, "And just how free would any of those countries be had it not been for America?" Yeah, okay, 180 nations enjoy freedom today. Some owe it entirely to America. Probably every one of the other nations owe their ability to get it and keep it to America. And certainly all of them owe the inspiration to aspire to it to America. So you see, the lack of knowledge of history on the part of the myopic scriptwriters was particularly galling to me. What about the blood our boys shed on the beaches of Normandy to secure the freedom? And I think you get the idea. After this, McAvoy ticks off a laundry list of facts that should satisfy anyone that America certainly is not the greatest nation in the world today. 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, 4th in labor, 4th in exports. And by that account, America is clearly not the greatest because we don't have as many, well, readers, and we lag behind in math and science. And honestly, I didn't have time to inquire whether his infant mortality rate included abortions, but it should. A million more. But anyway, and I'm thinking, yeah. And it's liberal policies that are responsible for all of it. There's not one thing in this list that we cannot point to by comparison between now and back when our country shared common moral code, when almost 70% of Americans attended church, when 98% believed the Bible was the word of God. I mean, we need only go back to the 50s when we were number one in every one of these criteria. And so what happened? Liberalism happened. It captured our government beginning in the 60s and look where it's brought us. Finally, his monologue crescendos with another expletive, and he gets nearly teary-eyed and starts pining for the good old days, you know, when America was the greatest nation in the world. And here's what, according to McAvoy, made America the greatest nation in the world at one time. Well, we stood for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We made laws and struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged war on poverty and not on poor people. We sacrificed, never beat our chest, nurtured the greatest artists and greatest economy in the world. We reached for the stars. We acted like men. We aspired to be intelligent, we did not make ourselves feel inferior, and we did not identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election. We did not scare so easily. That's pretty much it. And all of that is great. Well, most of it. And yet, it's meaningless. Unless you define what you mean when you say, we stood for what was right. Do you begin to see? Here is where the liberal gets particularly uncomfortable. Is the character saying liberals do not stand for what is right today? Or is the character saying that since we took on Trump, then we no longer stand for what's right? You get my point? It's very inspirational rhetoric. But think about what he's saying. If we take him in context and assume he means right and wrong, as these were generally understood, when America was the greatest nation in the world by each of the measurements he mentioned, well, then we would have to conclude he means back when right and wrong were understood within the context of the Christian ethos, you know, that prevailed and dominated throughout American culture back then. But there is one statement that betrays the liberal premise of his reasoning. He said, we waged war on poverty and not on poor people. And he's obviously referring to the Johnson years. You know, Johnson's war on poverty has increased poverty in this nation fourfold or more. You know that Obama, during his administration, has led the poor into greater poverty than any time in the history of our so-called war on poverty? In fact, the liberals' war on poverty, period, has been, period, a war on the poor, period. And those of you who saw this video can appreciate what I'm doing there. Liberal policies regarding poverty, the welfare state and all that, that is a war on the poor. He goes on to say, quote, we fought for moral reasons, end quote. Well, of course, in his view, I'm sure the Iraq war was not fought for moral reasons. So does he include the Libya war, by the way? I wonder if his morality thinks the moral thing to do now is ignore what ISIS is doing. What is the moral argument for refusing to render assistance against the genocidal movement called ISIS? He says we reached for the stars, Kennedy. So taking it together, his view is that America was exceptional in the days of Johnson and Kennedy. Interestingly, it just so happens those were the days when the essential liberal notions began to direct the policies of our nation that led us to where we are today. Now, I'll need to conclude. Maybe what disturbed me more than anything else the scriptwriters put into the mouth of this character was when he attacked the generation represented by that young college sophomore who asked the question. When after he excused her and admitted that, of course, these problems in America today are not the fault of a 20-year-old, he proceeded then to say that nonetheless, you are a part of the worst period, generation period, ever period. I thought, but you created her, fella. Or you and your ilk. You're the one that produced this shallow-thinking generation who smugly believes they're the best and the greatest and all this with no sense of responsibility to actually contribute anything. In other words, taking it all together, listen, it's the generation of the 60s and their distortion of our traditional values and the spoiling of our morals that has produced the appalling condition we face today. Don't blame these kids. Look in the mirror. And so we've come full circle. I concluded the first segment observing that what divides this nation is, well, right here. We are at war over the question of what is right and what is wrong. We are at war over the fundamental questions, the core values questions that define us as a people and that define our culture and that guide us. McAvoy opined with lament that we used to be informed by great men of great minds. And sadly, from a careful examination of his monologue, he must be referring to the thinkers and political shapers of the 60s forward. But you and I would think of the greater thinkers and the shapers of our nation, such as Washington, my most favorite, Madison, Hamilton, Franklin, Jefferson, and another of my very great favorites, Patrick Henry, or Locke, or Blackstone, or best of all, and the head of all. How about the Lord of all? The Lord Jesus Christ. You know, when he reigned as Lord, essentially over this nation, we were in much better shape. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. And now you call and let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. Leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. If you prefer to write to me, go to our website, brainmassageshow.com. That's just brainmassageshow.com. And you'll find a place there to write me an email. Let me know what you think about the show and share your thoughts with me. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.